Your line is unmuted.
Representative Kawasaki? Absent. Representative Seaton?
Back on the record, we did the brief introduction of the date and time. If we can have the clerk call the roll, please.
Representative Kawasaki? Absent. Representative Seaton?
Here.
Present. Representative Sponholz? Absent. Representative Johnston?
Here.
Present. Representative Ortiz, alternate?
Here.
Present. Representative Josephson?
Present on the phone.
Senator McKinnon?
Here on the phone.
Present. Telephonically. Senator Bishop?
Present. Telephonically.
Present. Telephonically. Senator Giesel?
Here.
Present. Senator Hoffman? Absent. Senator von Imhoff? Alternate?
Here. Here.
Present. Senator Stedman? Chair?
Here.
Nine present.
Roll shows nine present. We have a quorum to conduct business today.
Your line is muted.
The agenda looks kind of long, but it should run fairly smooth and fairly fast for its length. I'd like to go ahead and start with approval of the agenda, and if I can have some assistance from Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the agenda.
We have a motion to approve the agenda, and I will object for quick comment. We're going to, just as a quick note, in executive session, we're going to take the preliminary audits before the final audits. I will go ahead and remove my objection from the motion to approve the agenda. Any other objections to the approval of the agenda? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. Next item of business is approval of the October 9th, 2018 minutes. Senator Giesel, would you?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the minutes of October 9th, 2018 as presented.
We have a motion to approve the minutes as presented for October 9th, 2018. Do we have objection? Seeing no objection, those minutes are approved. Next item is approval of RPLs. And if we can have, Amanda Ryder from Ledge Finance is on the phone. Is that not correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
We'll have a brief at ease. We have representation from Legislative Finance on the phone. Amanda Ryder, if you can introduce yourself for the record, please, and who you represent, and we'll start off with the first RPL, and hopefully we have someone on from OMB in case there's other questions, and so we'll field them one RPL at a time. Ms. Ryder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Amanda Ryder with Legislative Finance. And I will be just providing a brief summary, and I'll pause after each one to see if there are any questions, and then I can move on to the next one. In RPL 02-9-0056, the Office of Public Advocacy is requesting $144,700 of Federal Receipt Authority. OPA received a federal grant totaling $600,661 over 3 years from FY19 through 21 to address the opioid epidemic in Alaska. No match is required for this, and a similar request is expected in the 15 budget for the remainder of the grant.
Okay. Seeing no questions, next item.
In RPL 08-9-0121, the Division of Insurance is requesting $199,700 of federal receipt authority in order to receive and expend grant funding from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. This funding would be used to assess whether health care plans are meeting Alaskans' needs, analyze accessibility and affordability of health care coverage, and conduct economic and actuarial research and analysis regarding accessibility to affordable health care coverage, and to develop recommendations. The remainder of the grant award will be requested in the FY20 and FY21 budgets, and no match is required.
Okay. Ms. Orfiel, do we have any questions? Seeing none, next item.
In RPL 20-9-0044, the Department of Corrections is requesting $73,000 of federal authorization because the federal grant award for the residential substance abuse treatment for state prisoners program increased to $138,000. The funding will be allocated to the residential substance abuse treatment program housed in the Highland Mountain Correctional Center, which is the state's primary female unit. The increase in funding is associated with the requirement that medication-assisted treatment services are now required to be incorporated as part of the spectrum of care in order to continue receiving this grant funding. There is a 25% match requirement, which is in essence about $18,000, $18,250, and that will be absorbed by the Department of Corrections.
Do we have any questions on this RPL? Seeing none, next item.
In RPL 05-9-0045, the Alaska State Council of the on the Arts is requesting $385,000 of statutorily designated program receipt authority to receive funding from new grants from the Margaret A. Carghill Foundation and the Rasmussen Foundation. These grants will support new arts and education programs and initiatives. These grants are expected to continue for the next 5 to 10 years, so a similar request is expected in the FY20 budget, and no match is required.
Okay, do we have any questions on this, RPL? Seeing none, next item.
In RPL 18-9-0374, the Department of Environmental Conservation is requesting $853,800 of federal receipt authority. For the past several years, the department has been preserving a portion of federal indirect cost revenue to cover a one-time cost of cubicle furniture that will be necessary to move into new office space in Juneau. This is a one-time request and has no future budgetary impacts.
Okay. Do we have any questions on this RPL? Seeing none, next item, please.
RPL 09-9-0113 funding would provide DMVA with $100,000 of statutorily designated program receipt authorization for the Homeland Security and Emergency Management Division for two employees to assist the state of California in the administration and implementation of FEMA emergency funding for the November fires in California. The immediate need for the RPL is just under $50,000. However, an additional $50,000 would allow for flexibility in responding to other requests for assistance. No match is required.
Do we have any objection to this item? Questions? Representative Seat?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious. This is a $50,000 request. Should the other more appropriately come through the as a supplement, or is the additional $50,000 justified for potential future expenses when they're not coming through this committee?
Ms. Ryder, can you help us with that, the timing of the request relative to the upcoming legislative session?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, the $50,000 could possibly come in as a supplemental request. It would be more administratively. If they do not receive $50,000 in federal receipt, they cannot expend any more money. So this $50,000 is not added to the base. It simply allows the department to expend additional funding for this purpose if they receive it.
Mr. Chairman, that answered my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Seaton. Any other questions on this RPL? Seeing none, next item.
In RPL 12-9-3 3040, DPS is requesting $300,000 because the amount of federal grant awards increased to $692,500. This funding will be used to improve the quality and timeliness of forensic science or medical examiner coroner services, to eliminate a backlog in the analysis of forensic science evidence, and to train, assist, and employ forensic laboratory personnel as needed. This morning, DPS informed me that the Coverdell competitive grant has been denied. So instead of needing $300,000, the RPL can be reduced to $163,400. No matches required and no new positions will be added.
We have questions on this RPL.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ortiz.
So those last comments, that mean that rather than the amount requested is $300,000, it's more on the $163,000? Is that what I just heard?
Ms. Ryder, could you help the committee with that question?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I would recommend that this RPL be amended to $163,400 instead of the $300,000.
So, Ms. Ryder, if I understand you correctly, you'd like this amended down to $153,000 even?
Mr. Chairman, $163,400.
Okay. Any other questions on this appeal? Representative Diesel?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee amend RPL 12-9-3040 to reflect the amount reduction to $163,400.
Do we have any objection to the amendment to bring this from $300,000 to $163,400 as referenced by legislative planning? Seeing none, motion is accepted. Ms. Ryder, do you have any other comments on this?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Do we have any objection from adoption of this RPL as amended? Seeing none, next item.
In RPL 12-9-3050, this Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault is requesting $500,000 of additional receipt authority as a result of an increase in the Federal Victim of Crime Acts, or that's VOCA, Federal Formula Grant Award. There are no match requirements, and DPS will be requesting additional federal authorization in the FY20 budget.
Do you have any objection to this RPL? Seeing none, next item.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the final RPL, in RPL 25-9-8623, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities is requesting $25 million of federal capital funding to address damage to major highways, roads, bridges, and other infrastructure caused by the November 30th, 2018 earthquake and the subsequent aftershocks.
Do we have
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
Mr. Chairman, this is Senator McKinnon. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to... Can you hear me now?
Yes, if you could identify yourself, Senator, and then...
Mr. Chairman, this is Senator McKinnon. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to put a potential conflict of interest on the record. My husband was recently appointed by the Dunleavy administration as the commissioner of the Department of Transportation.
Okay. Duly noted, as referenced in most of the media around the state. We have any objection to the adoption of this RPL to assist the state in responding to the earthquake issues?
Can I, Mr. Chairman, it's Andy Josephson. Can I ask a question about this?
Wait, just if you could. I'll go ahead and. Yes. If you could identify yourself for the record, please.
Yes, Andy Josephson.
Yes. Representative Josephson, do you have a comment on the RPL?
Yeah, if Ms. Ryder could just give us a little bit more background, if she knows it, the $20 million would go to which agency, and And is it sort of like a down payment from the federal government on other funds yet to be received? I saw in the paper that the local school district where you're all situated there in Anchorage is claiming that it will need $25 to $50 million by itself. And so I'm just trying to, given that this will be a big issue in the coming session, give us a greater sense of what this represents from in terms of other monies that might come from the federal government.
It's kind of hard to understand it on the phone, but Ms. Ryder, if you could help Representative Josephson, I think he's asking about the magnitude of the request versus the potential magnitude of the destruction and repair of the, and Ms. Ryder, if you could speak to that as far as trying to get us from this point in time to the normal budget cycle within the legislature so we could go into much more depth on this issue.
I have Rob Carpenter here to speak to this, and he'll answer the question.
Okay, Mr. Carpenter from Legislative Finance, you spent years doing the capital budget, and can you help with that question, please?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. This is Rob Carpenter with Legislative Finance. The agency is on the line probably with all many more details.
Mr. Carpenter, could you speak up a little bit? We're coming across pretty faint.
I'm sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes, just bark right into the mic.
Okay. Again, Rob Carpenter, Legislative Finance. The agency's online with all the details you could probably want, but the idea is they're setting up a collector appropriation to get initial money coming in from the feds on to do the, obviously, the initial addressing of all the damage. There's potential for match down the road that would be addressed in a supplemental budget. But this is just for initial collection of federal emergency funds to get well, they've already started, but to continue the process.
Correct. Just as a point, we at the Legislative Budget Audit can't do appropriations, but we can issue authority to receive federal funding. So we're trying to receive the federal funding to accelerate the a reconstruction of the state, and I'm sure this will be one of the top items that Senator Von Imhoff will be dealing with in the capital budget in minute detail across the state.
Mr. Chairman, this is Senator McKinnon.
Yes, Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In a direct response to Representative Josephson, the RPL in front of us is for the Department of Transportation. I do not believe it extends to the building damage into the Anchorage School District. That would be something different that would be taken up, as you noted, separately. As I understand it, reading the newspapers, we have received from the federal government an initial down payment of $5 million as they go through the emergency assessment process to understand what the damages are and what the federal government is willing to help us with along the lines of how we describe our damage. And the federal delegation, I believe it was on December 3rd, did a on-site review of damage all the way from Houston to South Anchorage and into the Girdwood area. So as Mr. Carpenter stated, DOT is on the line, but this particular appropriation for $25 million is specifically for the Department of Transportation and those public facilities.
Yes, that should be clear. We'll most likely be facing some school construction and reconstruction is what I'd expect. Do we have any other questions on this RPL?
Mr. Chairman, this is Amanda Ryder, and can I make one more statement?
Yes.
We received information from DOT that for the first 180 days after the earthquake or the event, reimbursement from the Federal Highway Administration is 100%, so no match would be required at this time. Anything after that is there will probably be some match.
Do we have any other comments? Any other objections to receiving the federal money so we can respond to the emergency? Seeing none, that takes care of the presentation for the RPL. We'll move now. Yes?
State, one conflict of interest. I missed it, sir. Point 0045, Arts and Education. I am a board member of the Rasmussen Foundation, so there was received money from the Rasmussen Foundation to the Arts and Education Fund.
Yes, duly noted. Senator Von Imhoff. And with that, Senator...
Could I ask, also ask a question? I see two RPLs. Maybe I missed them, but I don't think they were covered. It was 09-2019-0068, Alaska Military Youth Academy Authority increase. And the other one was 20-2019-0035. This was Department of Corrections, Juvenile Board of Juvenile Justice Assistance, or Bureau of Justice Assistance. And I don't recall those being covered.
I will have a brief at ease. On removal of the two items, that was caused some confusion here.
Your line is unmuted.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The Office of Management and Budget withdrew the two referenced RPLs, so we did not include them in these packets because they are no longer on the table. And they withdrew those RPLs at the same time that they added the $25 million federal RPL for DOT.
Okay, thank you. That should help with the confusion. Senator Giesel, could you help the committee with a motion with the RPL numbers and then the one amended RPL?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the RPLs. I'll read the numbers, Mr. Chairman, just for clarity. Mm-hmm. So RPLs are 029-0056, 089-0121, 209-0044, 059-0045, 189-0374, 099-0113, 129-3040 as amended, 129-3050, and 259-8623 as presented to the committee.
We have a motion to move the RPLs forward, including the amended 12-9-3040 down to $163,400. Do we have objection for moving the RPLs forward? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move the items forward. We'll go on to the next item on the agenda, item number five.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, we'll stop here. Yes, Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we need an affirmative vote on that particular action versus a no contest on it? I just want to make sure for the record.
That is a good point. We should actually go back, I think, and maybe because we have call-ins, call the roll. Let's do that. So let's back up the agenda with permission from the committee, and we'll do a roll call vote so there's no misunderstanding on the RPL motion made by Senator Giesel with the amended RPL numbers. If the clerk can call the roll, please.
Representative Kawasaki? Representative Kawasaki? Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Yay. Representative Sponholz?
Could you turn it up, please?
Thank you. Representative Sponholz? Representative Johnston?
Yes.
Yay. Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Yay. Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Yay. Senator McKinnon?
Yes.
Yay. Senator Bishop?
Yes.
Yay. Senator Giesel?
Yes.
Yay. Senator Hoffman? Senator Von Imhoff?
Yes.
Yay. Senator Stedman, Chair?
Yay.
Yay. That's 9 yays, 0 nays.
We have approval from the committee to move these forward. I'd like to thank the committee for the quick work in dispensing these items. We'll move on to number 5, the approval of a request of the Department of Health and Social Services Office of Children's Services. Reference under HB 151, if we can have Ms. Curtis come forward. And then I'd like to ask Senator Von Imhoff for maybe some preliminary comments on the request. I think we have a representative, Vera, here, that would also like to have a couple of moments. So maybe we'll start with the committee member first, Senator Von Imhoff. We'll have Vera come up with a couple of comments, and then we'll have legislative audit dig into some of the details, and the committee will look for action.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Senator Von Imhoff. This is the result of HB 151 that together myself and Representative Guerra worked to pass this past session. This is addressing the Office of Children's Services. The bill made several improvements.
Your line is muted.
And this audit is going to be taking a look at those changes to see how they have impacted how OCS operates and how they include placing children and processing their caseload. So this is a three-year rolling audit looking at building on the different implementation as it moves forward. And so we worked extensively this past summer and fall with Ms. Chris Curtis to put together an audit that was comprehensive. And this is the result of this letter is the result of that request. And so we feel that this department needed some changes, and now we're going to make sure that those changes are effective. And so if we need to tweak them going forward, we have data to do so.
Okay. Representative Garrett, could you come forward, please? And I think after the legislative audit is spoken, Representative Seaton might have some questions. Rep. Garrett, this will be one of your last times as a official member of the House to come before the committee on a subject matter that you've spent many years advocating for in Juneau. So I won't say it's your swan song, but if you're singing a little bit, I understand. You have a few minutes of the committee's time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Just so folks know, I spoke to Senator Von Imhoff and a few of the other members on the committee. I have some comments just on the very last section of the audit request on page 3, the last section, bullet point on permanency. And I've spoken to Senator Von Imhoff, and I now understand her intention. Future legislators may expect unrealistic things. You've all heard the testimony that things in New Jersey, which we based modeled much of this bill on, they started to improve 5-6 years after the implementation of the bill, and we can explain again why it had that lag time. But things aren't going to change tomorrow. And so the first three items on that bullet point are basically, are we achieving this federal standard of getting a child to a permanent home within 12 to 24 months? Well, the intention by Senator Von Imhoff, and she can correct me if I'm wrong, is to establish a baseline in a year or so that we can see in future years, are we doing better than what we were doing a year from now? But a future legislator may look at the success of getting a child into a permanent home within 12 to 24 months, they see it a year from now or 2 years from now and say, wow, you're not beating the federal standard. So if your goal is to just establish a baseline number a year from now, I would just change in this bullet point add some language to say so we can have a baseline for future years. But if people are going to say, well, you're not doing very well a year from now when the numbers come out, then I think it would be relevant for them to know to see how that number a year from now compares to past practice, because what you want is improvement in the system, right? You want to, whether or not you actually achieve the federal standard, you want to know whether you're making your system better. And so if that's something you want to look at this point, I would say compare these numbers in the first 3 points on permanency within 12 to 24 months to how they were doing in, I would say, 2016, 2017. A year before we passed this bill, we made some major improvements in the Wasilla office, and they started to show up in 2018. So those are the two things. A, I would just include some language at this bullet point saying we're trying to establish a baseline so that in future years we can have something to measure against, just so a future legislator isn't confused that, the improvements weren't made yet. We don't see improvements yet. So that's on those first three bullet points under that bullet point, permanency of 12 to 24 months. On the last one, placement stability, how many times are youth bouncing between foster homes? Same thing. That number is not going to make any sense unless people know that this is a baseline number that we want to... And if people want to know, have we had any impact yet, then the question, then you might want to add, how does this compare early in the analysis of the bill to, let's say, 2016 and 2017? So again, you might want to have 2016, 2017 comparisons on that one. I skipped the fourth bullet point, and this one is interesting. There might be some unintended consequences here. Re-entry into foster care. Coming back into the system. If the bill works, that number may actually go up, because there are two ways we want to get youth into a permanent home. One is they go to a loving adoptive family or guardianship, and that's a permanent home. But the other way is, and one of the things that we aim for with this bill, and they aim for in New Jersey, is reunification with the original family. And so if more time with the original family, caseworkers in the original family, is spent, and we get more youth reunified with their original families, these are families, in many cases, that are going to have long-term alcohol or substance abuse problems. So they will work through those problems. OCS will say, you know, we've worked with you. You've done it. You seem very ready to take your child back. We're going to reunify. And that's a good thing. But a number of those families are going to fail, because they are battling drug abuse and alcoholism problems. And we know that you don't have 100% success with that. So the re-entry into foster care measure, just want to caution you, the bill might, if you reunify more youth with their families, when some of those families fail, those kids are going to come back into the foster care system. So this number might actually show an increase in re-entry, just inadvertently. I don't know that, but I just wanted to flag that for the committee. So that's basically what I wanted to share with the committee. You all know, because in the House and the Senate, we're very clear that the New Jersey model, that the numbers didn't really start to improve until the 5-6 year mark. And so you know that you're probably not going to get massive changes on day one. I think there will be improvements in people's lives early on, but numbers haven't changed. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. We'll go on to the auditor's comments and suggestions, and then we'll go to Betsy, and then we'll continue from there.
For the record, this is Chris Curtis, legislative auditor. What is unique about this request, as Nicole mentioned, is that it's really a request for three audits, and that is necessary because the bill has various effective dates. So, training for various things within the bill happens at different times. So instead of waiting 4 years to look at anything, we're suggesting going in after a year, after 2 years, and then after 3 years. And when you go in second, third times, it's about whether initial findings have been addressed. So you're continuing to looking at. As far as the baseline, I do think I would like to guide on the permanency measures, what we should do. It sounds like it might be a good idea to go ahead and calculate those as of 2016, 2017, and then look at them after the last audit or as part of the last audit and do the comparison to that. And one of the things I heard was that sometimes it's difficult to get the measures from the agency itself. So we would be providing that baseline and initial audit objectively from our auditors, and then we will be doing a last audit as well. So if the city wants to go back to just calculate those for 2016, we can do that in 2020. So that should be enough time to see these changes.
Senator Von Imhoff, I'll let you
read on this. This is your request, and but I'd like to see your initial comments. And
so, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Ms. Curtis, I think that sounds very reasonable, and if that's something that you can do, I think it meets the spirit of what Representative Guerra was asking. Again, to go forward in terms of are we meeting, just to address Representative Guerra's concerns, are we looking for trends? Are we looking for specific values, as in are we meeting or not failing to meet the federal guidelines? For me, so I'm just going to take this comment one step further. So, number one, yes, please, in your initial audit, try to find the baseline of the last couple of years prior to when the changes in HB 121 passed, 151. I personally don't feel that we have to put in the audit a specificity, as in, like, to see if trend lines have occurred or to determine whether we're above or below federal guidelines. To me, that's the analysis part that's inherent in an audit. While I also understand, and I may be making this assumption, Representative Guerra, that we don't want any ramifications 3 years from now from a future legislative committee saying, well, because you didn't meet these guidelines, we're shutting you down. I don't want that to happen. I personally, sitting here today in 2018, don't feel that that's the spirit of the intent of this audit. Do you feel that we need to have that specific language in this letter?
I'm Senator Moneyhouse for the chair. I don't feel that, but I do want to highlight the actual bullet does say we will compare these measures to national standards. I know there is some concern expressed that comparing national standards may not be what we really want to do. So I guess I need some direction. Do you want a comparison to national standards at all, or do you just want a measure and then compare future oscillations to the baseline?
Because we are looking at New Jersey and other states for guidance, this is a national scope. I think comparing it nationally is fair, but in the analysis, I also think it's fair to, when you're doing your audit, to make notations of what perhaps may be Alaska-specific, tribal compact agreements, for example, and whatever may come during the 3 years that you're doing this. I feel that, yes, we should do a national standard, but in your analysis, you should look at Alaska-specific effects as well.
Okay? Ripsy. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. I guess speaking as a past chairman of the Health and Social Services Committee, it seems to me that a lot of what this is doing is trying to transfer something from Health and Social Services to legislative budget and audit as an audit function instead of as a committee function, because in the committee, you have full ability to bring the commissioner, the other people, OCS, before the committee and ask the questions of how their performance is going on implementing 151 and getting that data right from them. And I think that going in and having this multi-stage audit that is ongoing throughout the time they're trying to implement this is going to be, there's going to be conflicts or disruption within the department, because the auditors are going to be in there while they're trying to implement something, and there's not going to be enough time to actually tell anything, but we're going to be getting in legislative budget audit back report, not to the HES committee. And so I feel this is almost getting like more of a performance audit, which we've given up on, and we are not doing those now because of several reasons, but I have this feeling that this is going to be quite disruptive within the new administration trying to implement the provisions of 151 and how they
and how they do implement those. And I think the very short timeline audit is something we could just, if you want to know how many people they hired, that's a request from the committee chair of Hess to the department saying, how many people have you hired and this and that, which seems to be more of the impetus of this kind of audit. So I think it's kind of mixing the committee function with legislative budget and audit. Mm-hmm. So,
and before we go to Representative Johnson, could you help Ms. Curtis in your concept of the potential conflict or process or disruption that was mentioned by RC?
Certainly, through the chair of the seat. First, I want to clarify that performance reviews, which were added to legislative audit duties 5 years ago, has been defunct. Those are reviews that we would facilitate with a contractor to review this agency. Those are not performance audits. Performance audits are still requested through this committee, which is what this is. An audit is a much different level of assurance than a performance review for the proposed. So that's, I wanted to clarify that. The concern that an audit disrupts an agency is a very valid concern. We do. We take up their time. It is disruptive. And it, we try to limit the disruption as much as possible and work with them. That is a function of the oversight process of an audit. It is disruptive. Whether you get the same level of assurance from asking the department to report information versus having us prepare it is much different level of assurance. And the information that we'll be looking at involves testing files, getting into to that type of thing, which I'm not sure they could actually provide you this week. They can provide you anecdotal feedback about how they're feeling, things are going, and that is valid and informative and helpful, certainly. But it will not provide you the level of assurance audit. And so that's the policy call of this committee.
Rep. Johnson.
Thank you. You hit on what I was aiming for. I feel whenever we have largely transformative legislation, which this is, and as the person who drove a lot of this transformation is retiring, I think we do need a performance audit for those reasons. And I've done a lot of work with social agencies in the past, and I've actually been one of those that have given the anecdotal stories. And I've been in Hess Committee, and I've heard a lot of anecdotal stories. But it's been very hard to get data. And I think by actually putting this in an audit situation, it also would do something which I keep writing for, which is process. And you can't have data without a good process. And it might even encourage better process and maybe more digitalized process and something that does more with this and less with writing down and then re-entering and then re-entering and then re-reading and re-entering. And so I think this drives what Representative Bear has been trying to do. And the other aspect is, I don't know, you know, who's going to be chairs of Hess going forward, and this might not be on the radar. And we here have the responsibility to keep it on the radar. So I'm very supportive of this audit. Thank you.
Let's see, did you have a follow-up? I had no intention of cutting off. I was just trying to keep the order going.
Well, no, it's just that I think that we are, as legislative budget and audit, getting into trying to determine on an ongoing basis, because this is multi-years, developing the usage of what's going to happen in the committee. And so I think that the committee may, as Representative John said, just default to legislative budget and audit, and that's going to fall on this committee, and this committee is going to be in charge of doing all that, because it's not only going to be establishing the audit that's going to come back to us or to you,
but I think that it's going to mix some things. So this ongoing rolling audit, I think, is maybe beneficial at some point in time, but at some point in time, if the numbers aren't there in the very first year, it may be a reason to abandon the program entirely because it's not developed and it has hired the right number of people. And, you know, with the downsizing of personnel, that is a impetus in this new administration. I'm not sure that we actually move things forward by saying, have you performed immediately at this point in time? And if the answer is you haven't, then before the whole thing gets implemented, I think I just have conceptual problems with establishing rolling audits, and because I know a number of bills could be done this way, whether you have concerns, and I think that that's establishing a procedure that might be used, more often than we would anticipate by people that are concerned about a certain issue. So,
Rep. Josephson, I think I heard you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment for the record and to sort of inform Ms. Curtis what I think I've heard from Representative Guerra, and that is, in a sense, what we're trying to do, I think he's suggesting, is we need to compare ourselves to our previous selves, and he wants to make sure that the audit does that. And then relative to a national standard, one thing that would interest me is my understanding is that no state meets the standard, and it may be because they want states to continue to work hard on these issues. So I would be interested, if there is going to be a comparison to a national standard, what other states do meet the standard? Because I think we'll find that none or very few do. And then just to reiterate that we need to give House Bill 151 a chance to work. And New Jersey apparently needed or recommended that it be given something in the neighborhood of 5 years to prove itself.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Curtis.
Just one last comment. One thing that wasn't mentioned is the actual Bill 151 did include intent language that HSMS cooperate special audit on this bill. And that intent language was put in the Senate side and was discussed on the floor as part of getting the
thank you. We have any other final comments before we take a brief at ease? Well, a brief at ease.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the special audit request for Department of Health and Social Services, Office of Children's Services, as presented, with an amendment to include baseline data from fiscal year 16.
Okay. We have a motion on the table to move the audit request forward, adding the baseline data. Do we have any objection to moving the audit forward? We're going to vote in it.
I'll object.
Okay. We have an objection. Rep. Seaton, would you like to speak to your objection?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I made my position clear during that discussion.
Okay. Thank you. The record reflects that Rep. Seaton is helping us with the clock. Won't repeat his earlier testimony on his concerns, and they stand as presented earlier in the meeting. If the clerk could call the roll, please.
Your line is unmuted.
The
Representative Kawasaki? Absent. Representative Seaton? Nay. Representative Sponholz? Absent. Representative Johnston?
Yes.
Nay.
Yes.
Oh, I apologize. Yay. Representative Josephson?
May I pass for now?
Pass? Yes. Senator McKinnon?
Yes.
Yay. Senator Bishop?
Yes.
Yay. Senator Giesel?
Yes.
Yay. Senator Hoffman. Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Excuse me?
Yay, yes.
Yay. Senator Stedman, chair.
Yay.
Yay. 6 yays, 1 nay.
The item is, the motion has passed the committee. Next item up, we're going to go into executive session. The committee has items to discuss in executive session.
Your line is muted.
And Senator Diesel, if you please make a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee go into executive session under Uniform Rule 22 of the Alaska Legislature and AS2420301. The purpose of the executive session is to consider the following: final audits for the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers, the Board of Dental Examiners, the Board of Nursing, Statewide Suicide Prevention Council, Memniska Lakes Select Property Disposal, Statewide Single Audit FY15 Reissue. In addition, the preliminary audits of AGDC and DCCED, Big Game Commercial Services Board. I ask that the following persons remain in the room or online: the Legislative Auditor, necessary staff for legislative audit, any legislators not on the committee, and staff members, staff for members of the committee.
And we have a motion to go into executive session to take care of the preliminary audits. We'll do those first, and then we'll go into the final audit second. Do we have any objection to that? Seeing none, we will take a brief at ease while we clear the room and go into executive session. Executive session will probably take hour, maybe, wouldn't you think? Something like that, and then that'll pretty much conclude today's workload. We will stand at ease. Session from executive
session. Can you put that?
December 13th, 2018, let's say the Budget Committee, it's 12 minutes after 12 o'clock p.m. If I could have the clerk call the roll to verify if we have a quorum.
Yes, Representative Kawasaki? Absent. Representative Seaton?
Here.
Present. Representative Sponholz? Absent. Representative Johnston?
Yes.
Present. Representative Ortiz?
Present.
Present. Representative Josephson?
Here.
Present. Are you telephonic still?
I am.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Senator McKinnon?
Present online.
Thank you. Senator Bishop? Absent. Senator Giesel?
Present.
Present. Senator Hoffman? Absent. Senator Von Imhoff?
Here.
Present.
Here.
Senator Stedman, chair?
I'm not here.
Present. Eight present.
I think we have eight present. We need six for a quorum. If I'm not mistaken, is that correct?
Talking to me?
We have a quorum to do business and vote, I guess, without the help of the alternates. So with that, I'd like to go to, we have come out of executive session. We had the roll call. I'd like to have a motion for some audits from Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So first motion will relate to the final audit. I move that the committee approve the release of the following audits, the following final audits, to the public: the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers, the Board of Dental Examiners, the Board of Nursing, the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council, the Matanuska Maid Select Property Disposal, and the Statewide Single Audit FY15 Reissue.
And we have a motion to move those audits, final audits, forward. Do we have any objection to to the of any of the audits moving forward? Seeing none and hearing none, we will move those final audits into the public arena. We have another motion.
Senator Geer. Mr. Chairman, there are two preliminary audits. I'll make the motion separately. I move that the committee approve the release of the preliminary audit for AGDC select financial issues.
Wait, if we can just stop them for a minute again, we need to back up. I think we need to vote on that because we have telephonic folks. So let's, sorry about that. I'm used to the arena in Juneau where we full speed ahead. If we could back up the agenda with permission from the committee back to the final audits, that motion. There was no objection to hearing, moving them forward. And if we could have the clerk call the roll of the committee.
Yes. Representative Kawasaki? Absent. Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Yay. Present. I mean, excuse me. Yay. Representative Sponholz? Absent. Representative Johnston?
Yes.
Yay. Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
I think we could stop there. I think the alternates don't vote.
All right. Thank you.
No vote.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Yay. Senator McKinnon?
Yes.
Yay. Senator Bishop? Absent. Senator Giesel?
Yes.
Yay. Senator Hoffman? Absent. Senator Stedman, Chair?
Yay.
Yay. 6 yays, 0 nays.
So we move those audits, final audits, into the public arena, and we'll return to Senator Diesel.
Mr. Chairman, again, the preliminary audits. The first one, I move that the committee approve the release of the preliminary audit for AGDC select financial issues.
And we have a motion to move the AGDC select final issues preliminary audit forward. Do we have objection? Hearing no objection, will the clerk please call the roll?
Yes. Representative Kawasaki? Absent. Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Yay. Representative Sponholz? Absent. Representative Johnston?
Yes.
Yay. Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Yay. Senator McKinnon?
Yes.
Yay. Senator Bishop? Absent. Senator Giesel?
Yay.
Yay. Senator Hoffman? Absent. Senator Stedman, Chair?
Yes.
6 yays, 0 nays.
Motion moves forward. Next item up and the last item, work item on the agenda, Senator Diesel.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee approve the release of the preliminary audit for the Big Game Commercial Services Board.
We have a motion to move the Big Game Commercial Services Board preliminary audit forward. Do we have objection? Hearing and seeing no objection, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Kawasaki? Absent. Representative Seaton? Yay. Representative Sponholz? Absent. Representative Johnston?
Yes.
Yay. Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Yay. Senator McKinnon?
Yes.
Yay. Senator Bishop? Absent. Sorry. Senator Giesel?
Yes.
Yay. Senator Hoffman? Absent. Senator Stedman? Chair?
Yay.
6 yays, 0 nays.
We have affirmative action by the committee to move the Big Game Service Commercial Thank Board you. Forward in preliminary audit. That concludes the...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator.
Representative Josephson.
Representative Josephson.
I would like to quickly ask the committee's indulgence to reconsider an amendment made on an audit. It was one of the first orders of business, and it was on the Office of Children's Services. Could I speak to my recommendation?
You want us to back up and
remove our actions of a on a previous action?
Potentially. If a what I would call a friendly amendment to an amendment that was previously adopted.
So I have a brief at ease.
Mr. Chairman.
The committee will not be backing up and rescinding action. But there is a recognition of the request, Senator von Imhoff.
Yes, we had talked earlier about utilizing fiscal year 16 as a baseline for the HB 151 audit, and I think after conversations, we would like to roll it up to fiscal year 18 as the utilizing that as the baseline for audit data.
Okay, we can do that and request the department to go forward with that. And if there's a need for a formal amendment to the request, we can do that at the following meeting. Representative, Mr. Chairman. This second here, please, Representative Seat.
Just for putting it on the record, I have no objection to changing that date. No. We had a vote on something, but I'm having no objection to changing the 18th, just so it's on the record.
Okay, that's good. Representative Josephson, does this take care of your immediate concern?
I believe it does, yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. We will go forward then. That concludes the workload today. We have we'll be scheduling another meeting a day or two before the session. Standard procedure, a little bit of cleanup work, and then we'll roll in with a new chairman and a transition. That I'd like to thank everybody for coming today. Does anybody have any final questions or concerns or the order of good order of the committee?
Only that I've done. Everyone, happy holidays.
Yes, happy holidays, Merry Christmas. May everybody get big fat presents and a deficit year. We are adjourned.